Today is Sunday, December 11th. Wow, the year is flying, 2016. And I say hello to both my students in front of me and to the many that are listening across the wide expanse of the world. You can't believe how many emails come in and they tell me I'm not the only one, all my friends, etc., etc. Baruch Hashem. I'm riding high because Agudat Yisrael has suddenly joined forces with Rakefet. You know what's happening. They're opening up a website. Their whole convention was online. And they're suddenly speaking in terms of using the computer to expand their ideas. And everyone tells me that I must have a Talmud in the column stolen a Rebbe. Because the column stone, the Rebbe, who happens to be American, and they say it's very good and very with it, is either quoting me or both of us came up with the same idea, although I've been saying it for 3 years already. If we're spending tens of millions of dollars to demonstrate the Asifa in City Stadium, City Field, and to demonstrate against the computer, why not demonstrate against cars? And the common stone of the Rebbe said exactly the same thing last week in defending his attitude towards computerization and all that goes with it. So I am in good hands. But let's come back here. And we're in the middle of a very fascinating tshuva, which has a world of material in it. We're going to scratch more today, dealing with our attitude towards helping Russian Jewry and the Menashe Klein. We dealt with the first part of it. Can this be real? We compared Rebbe Menashe Klein to Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And there's no question that we've seen a tremendous miracle. Rebbe Menashe Klein, who never suffered under the communists, he suffered under the Nazis, couldn't really be as quixotic, I would say, as Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik was, who couldn't believe it's possible under the communists to have a reawakening. Then we went into the whole question of demonstrations, and I showed you Rav Menashe Klein's tshuva, and I compared it with Rebbe Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who was the heart of last week's Sheyur. And there too, it's a very interesting topic. Should we demonstrate? Shouldn't we demonstrate the efficacy of demonstrations? Maybe go back to the old system of Hishtadlut, which from time immemorial has worked. Not worked for the Jews, but that's what we knew what to do from Yaakov Avinu. What is the Daron, if not Hishtadlut, right? He prepared himself Daron, Milchama, and finally Tfilah. And his tadlut, it worked with Esav. He cried, and, Machlokes and Chazal, whether the tears were real, but there's one opinion that at that moment he was moved with brotherly love, and his tears were real. The dots on the word, and it's dashing either way. So this is a Machlokes, and the answer is rabbis can't decide it. It has to be decided by experts, and there's no question that by the mid-80s, the demonstrations were breaking down the Soviet Empire. And anyone who opposed it earlier, by the mid-80s, should have come along and joined board. And that's what I told you. I was very upset because Rav Teitz came to Israel, and it was very hard for me to face the people in the Mossad who really knew better than anyone else in the world what was going on. They were the Munchen, and boy, they couldn't believe that a rabbi with Seichel, Rav Teitz, had a great reputation, but doesn't he know what's happening in Russia? But that leads to a different discussion, one that I will leave for future historians. Do we cooperate with the Russian government? And here you have to remember that Rabbi Teitz is one example, Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. The other example is Rabbi Arthur Schneier, the father of Rabbi Mark Schneier, who should live and be well. He's still active. He's a good few years older than I am. But I still remember him from yeshiva. And he too cooperated with the Russian government. And people like what the Mossad was doing, the Nativ, and Lishkat HaKeshet, worked with many different names, they were not exactly cooperating. They were working beyond the normative tourists, so-called tourists coming, meeting privately with refusnikim, and which system was better? There's no question that the Mossad system ultimately brought about this tremendous revolution and reawakening. It's more dangerous, but that's what was called for at the time. On the other hand, I'm not going to say Rabbi Teitz did wonderful things. He reprinted the Siddur. If you're familiar with the old Russian Siddur with Russian translation, Rabbi Teitz was responsible for reprinting it. A lot went on, a lot has been written, a lot has been discovered. The KGB files, I'll show you, I'll give out something later. The KGB files have now been opened, and they laughed how they made a fool out of the chief rabbi of the British Empire. In the mid-70s, they brought Lord Jacobowitz, and they put on a show for him. They got Jewish informers, and they got church people, members of the KGB. They all met with the chief rabbi and assured him there's no religious persecution and the shuls are open, the churches are open. And Chief Rabbi Jacobowitz believed it. And when he came back to England, he said, we don't have to fight to get the Jews out of Russia. There's freedom of religion. We just have to demand more and more religious activity in Russia. And when you read the papers of the KGB, they were meeting with joy how they pulled the eyelids, the eye covers, the eye blinders over the eyes of Chief Rabbi Jacobowitz. So you see, there's no solution that is perfect. Either one works, but has its dangers. The truth is, you needed both. But ultimately, when all is said and done, by 85, even the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't come out publicly against demonstrations. And it ultimately led. I mean, I'm not foolish enough to say only the demonstrations broke up the Soviet curtain, but there's no question that Chernobyl and the demonstrations together helped the Jewish cause immensely. Chernobyl happens to be a tremendous tragedy because anyone within 100 kilometers was exposed to very dangerous radiation. Many people have died. And once again, you have to give Chabad credit. They brought many of the children to Israel for therapy, and they saved many lives, and many of these children became good Jews. And again, I have to say, as a Litvak, I have to stand in awe of how Chabad reacted to the challenge and did wonderful, wonderful things.
You know, it's not built into the genes of a Litvak to be anti-Hasidic.
No, I'm well aware of it.
He got disinformation and made a horrible blunder, even though he was the goat. No one likes to say anything bad about anybody, especially historical personages.
Maybe you should look at it the other way, that Vilna Gaon opposed himself, the Hasidim, some Hasidic, if you're familiar with Makar Baruch, the Makar Baruch quotes the Tzemach Tzedek as saying, because of the Gaon, we remain good Jews. Now, I know, I'm aware that some good Chabadnikim who did very good research published articles that Lo Hayava Lo Nivra, that it's not true. So you can look at it either way. But okay, that's not for now. But there's no question that with the children who were hurt in Chernobyl, Lo Aleinu, what Chabad did, it aroused the Jewish world conscience to help out. Now, then he spoke about how no one could get out of the Soviet Empire, you were locked in, and that was, you know, the Soviet Empire was the only country in the world that locked you in. They locked you in because they really believed that this was a socialist Gan Eden, and if you didn't like it, they executed you. Stalin, and Lenin, Stalin executed who knows how many. There's a whole machloket now. We always used to say he executed 20 million. Today they say it can be as high as 60 million, at least 40 million. It's unbelievable what one man did. And there's still people in Russia who worshipped the ground that Stalin walked in. I mean, that's what's amazing. At the kibbutzim, had pictures of Stalin on the wall. There's nothing to say. When he was killing Jews, when he was wanted to exile them to Siberia after World War, after Golda Meir, after the incident which I've spoken about in Moscow. This is why Russia supported the declaration of the State of Israel. They were right behind the United States. The Rep speaks about it, that it was a miracle, the only time America and Russia agreed at the UN. And Russia supported it because they really believe that this would be a communist center. And who was the head of the Communist Party in Israel? No? Tell me who? Reb Shimon Shkup's granddaughter. It's unbelievable.
Wasn't
Maya Wilner and Shulamit Elon. She was the granddaughter of Reb Shimon Shkup, and she was the head of the Communist Party for years, decades in the State of Israel, or one of the leaders.
Her son is still causing trouble.
No, that's your confusing her with Shulamit Elon. I'm talking about Elon. Elon. It's not Shulamit Elon. Shulamit Elon is not a communist. She was a leftist, but this lady was a communist, and she was Reb Shimon Shtup's granddaughter. It's unbelievable. Now, but there was one moment in the history of the Soviet Union when the Muma Sara, what she accomplished, the life she saved, and we spoke about it at the end of the class last week, the Muma Katzenelenbogen, Sarah Katzenelenbogen. I'm going to give you a source in a minute, but I want to show you the chesed that we did in class, not even realizing it in 1 second. But first of all, who was she? So you recall, she was a lady, a Chabadnik, born into Chabad, married into Chabad. She was very friendly with the fifth Rebbetzin Sterner. Obviously, she knew the sixth Rebbe's wife. She was Chabad. After World War II, her husband was executed, never heard from again. We don't even know if he was buried, if the body was cremated. God have mercy. I'll give you details in a second. After World War II, there was a certain period that the Russians allowed for what they called reunification. Reunification is permissible under communist Russian law, outlook, regime, laws, etc. German-speaking people who were in Russia were reunified, Posen went back to Germany, and then they said that anyone who can prove they were Polish citizens before World War II, they can go back to Poland. The Muma Sara was in charge of a massive operation, false birth certificates, passports, whatnot. Thousands upon thousands of Jews were saved. Not only saved, but if you're familiar with David Eliezeri's book, which I've quoted to you many times last year, and I told you it's a book worth buying, it's excellent. It's not a biography of the Rebbe. The biographies are by Miller, by Plushkin, by Rav Steinsaltz, and Yitzhak Rafua Shlema. We should be mitpalel for him.
He's doing better.
Halavai. He's a great individual, one of the greatest of our generation. So they wrote the biography of the Rebbe. I spoke about it in great length. I'm not going to repeat myself. It's all on YU Torah. But the book by Eliezeri is how Chabad works. And Rabbi Eliezeri, who's a real clear thinker, made the point that, and I elaborated last week, that following World War II, it's not just that Chabad began in Crown Heights in 770. At the same time, thousands of Chabadnikim, of the real core of Chabad, Nishgevarna, born and bred in Chabad, got out of Russia, and they wind up all over the world. By the time the seventh Rebbe restarts Chabad, I'll use that word, puts it into high gear, high speed, these Jews, it's not only the American Balei Tshuva, but all over the world, America, England, Australia, South Africa, Israel, of course, Canada, France, you have Chabadnikim who got out because of Mama mamas, muta, the mumasara, the mumasara. I explained the word last week. And we're talking in terms of thousands upon thousands. Well, the mumasara. Okay, so I want to share with you two emails I received. This is from someone in Chabad. Dear Rabbi Rekefet, I am so excited that you are touching the amazing story of Sarah Katzenellenbogen. I am alive because of her. She saved my father, aunts, grandmother, grandfather from Russia, among the thousands of other Hasidim, including the Rebbe's own mother, to whom she gave her own forged passport to. The Rebbe's mother, remember? The Rebbe's mother got out to Paris, Poland to Paris. The Rebbe, it's one of the only time the Rebbe left America was to go see his mother in Paris and bring her to the United States. And he describes today, she was my great-grandmother. My father's mother was her only daughter. Just her offsprings, from her sons, Shimon, Yoshua, Moshe, Zalman, and her daughter, Tzivya, count today of over 2,500 direct descendants at a minimum. There are probably many more than 2,500. Chabad Chassidim, which Shluch and Rashi Yeshiva, and just regular good people all over the world. Yeah, you can imagine. One lady. And he makes a correction, by the way. I mentioned the rabbi who was killed in North Miami Beach, Raskin. So I said maybe he's a relation to her, because there are Raskins in the family. One note, the person killed in Miami, his name was Raksin, R-A-K-S-N, not R-A-S-K-I-N. So I stand corrected. Now, one of her children, my dear student, Aryeh Liebman, sent this to me, Rabbi Zalman Kazin. Why the name Kazin and not Katzenellenbogen? Maybe someone can tell me. Maybe that's the passport he got out on. You follow that? It was a different name because passports didn't have pictures then. That's how you could have all these forgeries and get away with it. Today it's a lot harder, although people still forge passports. Rabbi Zalman Kazin, 92 years old, died in 2011. And Rabbi Kazin, the son of Mrs. Sarah Katzenellenbogen, known as the fearless Mama Sarah, who sacrificed her life to help Jewish people under the communist regime. And this is a beautiful article about him. He and his wife went to Cleveland. They were in Cleveland over 50 years. 92 years old when he died, congregation Semach Tzedek on Lee Road in Cleveland with his wife Shula Kazin, and just beautiful pictures of the care of the children. I don't know, it's overwhelming to me because, you know, no one can even start to understand. Here's his wife with family and people, their makarev. Here's Rabbi Kazin with his children, all Chabadnikim, all fabulous individuals. So you see, mentioning Mumasara was a Gemilat Chesed, because how many people know this name? I know it from my own research on Chabad. But now, Baruch Hashem, thousands of people recall this great woman. Now, do you want details of her life? Details of her life, I come back to my friend and colleague today with his new book that Rabbi Rubin has ordered, Who's Who in Lubavitch Women. That's one of his earlier books. Rabbi Chaim Dalfin printed 4 years ago, 2012. And here, beginning on page 55, he tells the story of Sarah Katzenellenbogen, 1891 to 1952. She lived for several years in the city of Lubavitch, where she worked in the kitchen of Yeshiva Tomkei Tumimim. Now, I have to tell you, these women who work in the kitchen of yeshivat, they become tzidkaniyat, even if I don't know what they were before, but their exposure to yeshiva boys, to mimim, okay? I hope YU is like this. I can't guarantee anything because I haven't really been in YU as a real part of it in New York for 48 years now. But I remember in my time, I remember in Lakewood, Mrs. Berman was a yekka, a widow. She ran the kitchen. And I remember every student, she knew many of the names. Lakewood was not that big then, maybe 100 students, 102. Everyone was rabbi. And they used to say that when you learned in Lakewood, you got a kitchen smicha from Mrs. Berman, the lady who ran the kitchen. But I'll tell you an interesting story that you should digest and repeat. One time on Shabbos, davening was over sooner than they thought, and we all reached the dining room at 10:15. And the people in charge, the gabayim, told Mrs. Berman, who was a yeket, this is very important, underlined the word yeket. They told her that everyone would be in to eat at 10:30, have everything ready for 10:30. By 10:15, the place is filled. She refused to serve until 10:30. 10:30, that's what they told her. She's ready, but her mind is ready to serve at 10:30, not before. All right. Monday morning, Reb Aaron returned from New York. Many Shabbatot, Reb Aaron was in Borough Park. You know, there's a lot of fundraising involved, which is really a tragedy that Reb Aaron, the difference between the Rav and Reb Aaron, I've said this many times, and people who know that what I'm talking about kiss me, they can't hug me, they can't. The Rav's main learning took place in America. You follow me, Yitz? Reb Aaron's learning was all in Europe. His seven-year cycle of Shiurim all went back to Kletsk, the 20s into the 30s. In America, Nebuch, he was overwhelmed with fundraising. You know, the reread some of the literature on Reb Aaron. It's too bad that we don't have a definitive biography. I'll talk about that tomorrow. So Reb Aaron would have to go to New York, and Sunday was the main day for fundraising. People worked during the week. Sunday you could make an appointment for the balabas. So when he came back Monday, and I'm an ear witness and an eyewitness to this. This is not ish mipi ish. This is edut nemana. Sunday, three of the Elter Rebbechim went into the Rosh Yeshiva. It was a converted house where Lakewood began. It was a converted house. And there was like a little study, which was a modern study. There was a door on it, and there was a beautiful shas in the study, a shuls in the shas with blue binding, not red. Red was the regular binding. The blue binding was twice as expensive. Very good binding. Mr. Klein of Barton's Candy bought that shas for Reb Aaron, and no one touched it. That was Reb Aaron's shas. In his study, no one touched that shas. All this from the Beis Medrash, this one used it, that one used it, but that shas was Reb Aaron's, never to be touched, but should always be there at his disposal. Fine. The Elder Rebbechim knocked on the door, they went in, and they said to Reb Aaron, they told him, was es getreffen, what happened on Shabbos, and they said, 15 minutes we sat there, Beetle Tyra. Alex, in your world, this could never happen. They would sfabreng, they would sing, but Litvisha, who sang, what, when, where in Lakewood? 15th day. And Reb Aaron's answer can never be forgotten. I believe I wrote it up in Washington. Ihr seid gerecht, you're right, but es ist gar nicht, was ich kann tun. There's nothing I can do because she is an almana. And could you imagine Reb Aaron Cutler? I can't say a word to her. She is an almana. And did I learn something from that? Okay? Don't forget. Now, we come back to Sarah Katznellenbogen. In 1950, she was very close to Sterner, Sarah, the wife of the fifth Rebbe, the Rashab. In 1937, the year I was born, her husband, Reb Michal, was arrested and exiled. She never saw him again. and no one knows what became of him. A successful businesswoman, the Mumasara, Aunt Sarah, as she was known to the Hasidim, donated generously towards the maintenance of the yeshiva. She volunteered to serve as a courier carrying yeshiva funds from city to city. In addition, she provided free lodging and meals for 6 yeshiva students in her home. This served a dual purpose. The boys had a home, food to eat. Her 4 young sons, left fatherless, had a good role model to learn from. Okay? In 1946, the opportunity arose for Hasidim to escape Russia through the use of forged Polish passports. This duty was assigned to a number of people, the most prominent, Mumasara. Although the danger was obvious, and she knew the fate of her predecessors, Mumasara took on this role with zeal and ingenuity and helped hundreds of Jews to flee the Soviet Union, including 5 of her 6 children. She herself refused to take advantage of the opportunity to leave, saying that helping others was her first priority. In 1947, the authorities became aware of her activities, and she became one of the most sought-after criminals in the country. Finally, they captured her, and she was originally sentenced to death. Afterwards, 1 year later, she was brought to trial. This is in 1951, captured in 50, sentenced to be shot. After spending 2 months on death row, her sentence was reduced to 25 years of hard labor. During her trial, Mumasara was given a few minutes to speak for herself. Instead of begging for mercy or denying the charges against her, she proudly took credit for them and declared how happy she was that she succeeded in helping so many to flee Soviet persecution, including 5 of her 6 children. Her only regret, she said, was that she was not able to send her son Moshe out as well. And he writes, it is hard for us born in the freedom of the United States to understand the strength it took for her to face the communists, known for torture and cruelty, and make these statements. On the 7th of Nisan, 5712, 1952, Mumasara met with her son Moshe in work camp, where both were imprisoned. They had a long conversation, and one of the questions she asked him was if he remembered the chapters of Tanya he had once known by heart. In their short time together on that day, she managed to greatly encourage him and to give him strength and hope to carry on the struggle and overcome his adversaries. She promised him that he would eventually reach freedom, and he did. Before they were forced apart, she handed him several packets of sugar with which to sustain himself over Pesach. Mind you, this was the 7th of Nisan. 2 days later, on the 9th of Nisan, Mumasara passed away in the work camp. No one knows if or where she is buried. So you see...
What happened to the son?
The son got out. Where he went, I don't know. Moshe. And maybe your Chabadnik listening will fill us in, but what was sent to me about Rabbi Zalman, we know where he wound up. Here he speaks about from Yitz Gold, the one about he's a great grandson. He speaks about Zalman and 2,500 or more direct descendants, but he doesn't tell us where Moshe wound up.
Zalman was also the son.
Yes, Zalman was the eldest son. And he died in 2011 at the age of 92. So, Be'ezrat Hashem, there should be more children left alive. But what a story what a woman, and what a schut. There's some people who live, and all they did was worry about themselves, totally self-centered. And there are other people who live, and what they do in this world is beyond description. Just think about it, how many lives they helped, the tzedaka, the worry about others. Unbelievable. Okay, Baruch Hashem, I don't want to say another word. Yomo, where are you going? Round up at least three Torah Tshraga guys, because I want to have more than a minion here to come back at 6:45. You got it? And explain to them it's a Gemilat Chesed, like Mumasura, although nowhere near that level. Okay. Okay, now. Now. Reb Moshe Klein, if they're talking about Mumasura and those got it out, the demonstrations and those that got out, and now he wants to deal with the status of the Jews in Russia. What is their halachic status? And here you get involved with the tremendous question, when do you give your life for Judaism and when don't you? And all of you know that through the three cardinal sins, Avodah Zarah, Shfichat Dam, and Gilui Arayot, you have to give your life. All right? I don't think in communist Russia anyone was ever forced to worship Avodah Zarah. I mean, you were forced to worship communism, but that's not exactly Avodah Zarah. Although Yitz and I will testify that communist Russia, there were Getchkes on every street corner. Wherever you went, there were statues of Lenin, of Stalin. There was a Frankel, a Jew involved, one of the original guys, Marx. If you went into a store to buy souvenirs, I should have brought it. I have one in my house. For two pennies, you'd get a beautiful, a large coin with Lenin's image on it. You follow?
Any image of Bornstein?
Trotsky was enemy of the people. There's no image. If you want to see Trotsky, you have to go to Kiryat Arba and see his great-great-grandchildren with payas and tzitzit, which is unbelievable. Yeah, his grandsons in Kiryat Arba went back to the name Bornstein. Trotsky's original name was Bornstein. The grandson goes with the name Bornstein. Right, in Mexico, they assassinated him in Mexico. 1981, January, first trip. But Lenin, Trotsky was an enemy of the people. Lenin, wherever you went, there were statues, there were images. So I said, when I got back, I told my students that the Russians are the smartest people in the world. We have a problem. Everyone says, where is God? Show me God. You know, they want to see. The kid wants to see, be tangible. You know, you have to explain to him, of course, that if God would be tangible, there's no need for religion. Religion is based upon the fact that you make freedom of choice and that lun beseta, betzel kadai, etc., etc. But I said, in Russia, they're very smart. Wherever you go, God is looking at you. The Getchkes are looking at you. But okay, those are Getchkes. The subway, remember the subways with the decorations, with the paintings, with the murals? Oh, wow. It was really, really something.
And the nicest subways in the United States.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No comparison. And not only that, you go to Red Square, there's Lenin's tomb. And in the communist empire, lines and lines were waiting to see the tomb.
Didn't they have the body preserved?
I'm talking. You see the body preserved. And lines are waiting. But if you tell them at work, you're going to Lenin's tomb, that's a good grade. That shows you're a good communist. But if you're getting married that day, I mean, this is unbelievable. Like, we go to mikveh when we get married. If you're getting married that day, you jump the line. You're allowed in special. You don't have to wait in line because you're getting married. Hashem, God have mercy, what a human being in the 20th century is capable of. I mean, Hitler on one hand and communism on the other hand. And by the world, the world hasn't changed much. If you heard the news this morning, I came to Shul. I said, boy, I'm the happiest person alive. The whole world is being destroyed. And there's not one word about Israel. Here are the news. What's going on in Turkey? What's going on in Egypt? What's going on here? In Nigeria. Unbelievable. And not one word about Israel. It was a pleasure. 5 o'clock in the morning. No scandals. No arrests. No ganavim. No rapists. Baruch Hashem. Everything was elsewhere.
They're too distracted with other things.
Right, right. No,
once those are taken care of, they'll focus on that.
No, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Halavai, they should be distracted. But what a world, what a world. So now, you all agree that for the three cardinal sins, you have to give your life. Now what about if you didn't give your life? If you didn't give your life, there's no penalty. In other words, you arrive in a mitzvah taseh of Kiddush Hashem. But to be arrive in a mitzvah taseh, there's no penalty. For the sake of argument, the person didn't take a lulav and etrog. Person didn't hear shofar. So you don't punish him. He just was over on a mitzvah taseh. Okay. Tell me, what about the other sins? With, there is a concept, for instance, when it's v'nigidashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, when they want you to be over to show their uprooting Torah, uprooting Jewish observance. So you all know that even if they read Gemara and Sanhedrin, a whole sugya, the fine dalaja, I bet I give like that, a whole sugya, Sheva mitzvah, even if they want to uproot the color of shoelaces, if it's b'pachesia in front of 10 Jews, you have to give your life. So there too, if he didn't do it, there's no punishment. And he definitely retains the status of being a Jew, a kosher Jew. All right, he didn't hear shofar. He didn't take lulav and etrog. He didn't give his life up as he should have. V'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. But still a good Jew. But wait a minute. What are we talking about? Talking about the communist empire. What about in his home? No one is watching. No one is coercing him. No one is forcing him. He can do whatever he wants in the privacy of his home. No? Now let's go into a communist home. Chazer on the table. It's the cheap meat available in the Soviet Union. We would have had a different state of Israel if not for Agudat Yisrael. But let me leave that out because I get too aggravated even to talk about it. I lived it. You know, and the law was introduced. You were here, right? Were you here early 80s? The law was introduced to the late 70s, to abolish among Jews. You can't raise chazi. And they had a majority in the Knesset. Of course, even in the Labour Party, there were people who would that still had that attachment. It's not today when anything goes, when we have to be like Obama and the modern world, etc. Who would ever dream? They ran articles weekend's newspaper on lesbian couples, children that they. Oh God, let me not even talk about it. It sickens me. Who would ever dream that could happen? And Agudat Yisrael was bought off, and they withdrew the proposal, they gave the money, who knows where the money went, and that was the end. They claimed the money went to Chinuch Atzmai. It was, if that law would have been passed, we wouldn't have 450,000 Russian immigrants who are not Jewish living here. A lot of Russians would have said, well, we can't get Chazal in Israel, we're not going to come. It would have been a cleansing agent. But all right, the law was not passed, the floodgates were open, and as my neighbor Rav Hutna said to me, his distant Russian relative arrived, and he asked the relative, where do you want to live? And he said, anywhere but Jerusalem. He said, why don't you want to live in Jerusalem? Oh, there they certainly don't sell chazah, and they don't let you drive on Shabbat. You follow this guy. Unfortunately, Rav Kuttner told him, you can live in Jerusalem too.
God, who was the head of Aguda at that period?
Menachem Parrish was the main person. And I'm not an Agudist. There are reasons why. Many good reasons why. I believe in Torah with all my heart and soul. I have no other value. Let that suffice. Yomon. So now we go into the Russian house. Chazer on the table. Basa b'chalav. Basa b'chalav.
Among
Jews. Among who we talking about? Russian Jews. I can tell you even better. I have a picture of it. In 1989, when the curtain was starting to open, when the fence was thawing, breaking down. So Yeltsin allowed the opening of a Jewish center, a Jewish cultural center in Moscow, the Shlomo Mikhail's Cultural Center. It's a very important moment in the history of Russian Jewry. Today it's totally, has nothing to do with what's happening, but no one would ever dream then what was going to happen afterwards. And Jews came from all over the world to the opening of the Shlomo Mikhail's Cultural Center, named in memory of the leading Jewish actor, play director, killed by Stalin in the early 50s. And that was the night, I think it was 52, in Atlanta, they killed. He was killed in Minsk when he went to observe the Minsk Jewish theater. And his daughter later wrote the memoir when she was in America, how her father ordered him killed, and she was an ear witness to the conversation. Because he represented Jewish identity. And that night, all the artists were killed, the playwrights, all Jews, none of them were Rabbanim, there was no religion left. So at the opening of the center, named after Shlomi Chodan, his daughter came from Israel, and his granddaughter came, and Yuli Edelstein got into Russia. I mean, it was unbelievable who came. And Marvin Heyer from America with all his assistants. It was an unbelievable crowd. And from Australia was the one that brought it about, the Australian ambassador. It was really something. And there in this Jewish institution, with the majority of the guests from Jews from all over the world, they're serving meat and milk mixed together, treif meat. Jews, gentlemen, what's our analogy in the history of the Jewish people? Think for a minute. The Anusim. That's the word. Onus. Onus Rachmana Patre. But the Moranos. But what a difference. Klape Chutz. Yes. They acted like Gentiles. They went to church. They went to confession. They played the game. They even ate non-kosher food when eyes were upon them. But when they came home, strictly kosher.
Yuri Edelstein's parents, both Presbyterian preachers.
His father, I know. I didn't know about his mother, but okay. But when they came home, Kashrut, Shabbat, perhaps even Tarat Mishpacha, not perhaps. Anusim. Goyim on the outside, Jews on the inside. And when you come to the Russian Jew, the problem is a little bit more difficult. Because there were Goyim on the outside and Goyim on the inside. When it comes to Anusim, no one will question the fact that they are Jews. Now, there's a lot of literature written in the response to literature. When they came back to Judaism, did they have to undergo a geirut? And I have to tell you, me'ika hadin, they did not have to undergo a geirut. They were Jews. What the Rashbash, I don't want to quote all the Chuvit now, but I've spoken about it over the decades. What they did ultimately do is a symbolic Geirut of Kabbalat Ol Torah Mitzvah, particularly Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. This was ingenious, and I'll tell you why. If you were concerned that over the decades, over the millennium, some of the Anusim intermarried, we can't be sure, are they really Jewish? So in reality, what this ceremony was of Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, it was a gerut without a bracha. You follow? This solution, halavai, they would have used in Israel with the Ethiopians. There was no need to say they needed conversion. If you had seichel, and it's one of the things that some of our rabbanim lack in public relations, you say this is a ceremony to celebrate their reunification with the corpus body of the Torah people. We would have solved so many problems. And this is in accordance with Rav Ovadia's psak. But here there were big problems. The Lubavitcher Rebbe held they should do a real conversion. Oh, he probably would have accepted. What I'm saying now would have been acceptable to the Lubavitcher Rebbe because it is a conversion, except you don't make a bracha. Okay? But there were others until today with this terrible negative attitude towards Ethiopians, towards... it follows over in certain parts of the Torah world towards Agata Mizrach in general. I don't have to elaborate. Suffice it on what I just said. I hope that problem is ameliorating itself. As Rav Ovadia Yosef's son, Rav Yaakov Yosef, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, he was really something, Rav Yaakov Yosef. The eldest of the sons was a Tzadik Yisod Olam. And I asked people from within, how did his brothers turn out so differently? And you know what they answered me? When Rabbi Yaakov Yosef went to school, his father didn't have money for shoes for him. He had to go in sandals, in slippers. His brothers were driven to shul in fancy cars with chauffeurs. That's the difference, they tell me. It's a very interesting thought. So Rabbi Yaakov Yosef said, the only place that Eidot HaMizrach are accepted as true brothers, as true B'nai Yisrael, he said in the Mizrahi movement, B'nai Akiva, and in Chabad. That's Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, quote, end quote. So, we could have solved the problem. But, all right, maybe our rabbis today are not that learned. This is a problem. I've spoken with rabbis who have big positions. And believe me, the Rav would have flunked them on any bechina he would have given them. Take my word for it. Okay? Could be they're not that learned, or could be just stupidity. And if it's stupidity, it is very, very sad, because that can't be corrected. Lack of learning, sit and learn, take off 7 years and just sit and learn.
They don't care.
But no, I hope they care. But being machmir is nishta kunz. Kolech de hetera adif. The Gemara in Beitza many times in Shas, many times in the poskim, koach de hetera adif. All right, now the Anusim were Jews at home. What's the status of Russian Jews where Ribbono shel Olam, the Russian Jews don't observe in public and don't observe in private?
The same thing is true with the Taimanides.
Okay. You're talking about at the time of the Ramban, but it's not true today.
No, the Taimanides.
But he encouraged them. They're Jews. Anusim, here with the Russian Jews, the problem is much deeper. And you can't just take the tshuvot of the Svadik Gedolei Yisrael at the end of the Achronic period, of the Tashbetz and others, the Rashbash, the Tashbats, I should say, you can't just take their tshuvot that dealt with these problems because the Russian Jew is different. There's no Yiddishkeit whatsoever.
But here, to another religion
here, also. Here, the answer is very simple, and Rav Menashe Klein says it. And you have to understand, this is the classic Tinuk Shenishba Bein Hagayim. And here I told you, I repeat it again in context. One of my greatest shlichim to Russia was David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo. You have to have known David to understand who he was. David was fabulous. In Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum. David was mad at me because about 35 years ago already, he's married to my student, Deborah. My wife just saw her. And David, just today, Martha saw her. And David asked me, should he be a Rosh Yeshiva or a medical doctor, Michael? And I told him, we have many medical doctors. We need good Rosh Yeshiva. You should be a Rosh Yeshiva. So he did not listen to me and went on to become the most famous emergency doctor in the state of Israel. So David, when he was going to Russia for me, he asked permission, because you got names. When we went, I got names. Yitzchak got names. Each time I went, I got names of people that the Mossad wanted you to see. There were messages to be delivered, money to be delivered, whatever. So David asked permission to visit the Feinstein Soloveitchiks, part of their family in Leningrad. And he knew Reb Aaron Soloveitchik gave him names and addresses that he had. And I said to David, I'll ask the boss. And the boss said, okay. And David Taka looked them up. And David came back and described, here were people that looked like Feinsteins, looked like Soloveitchiks. These were cousins. Totally, totally irreligious. Not irreligious. Ignorant. Knew nothing. All they knew was that they had some relatives in the United States, in Israel, who were great rabbis. Outside of that, they knew nothing. Give you another example.
They still keep the name Feinstein or
something? Yeah. I think they were Feinsteins. That was the name. They were cousins to the Rav. The Rav's mother was a Feinstein.
Yeah.
So they interlock. I'll give you another example. One of the greatest days in my life in Israel, a reward for coming in Aliyah. My revered neighbor, Rabbi Yoshua Hutner, told me he has an invitation for me in Malka. We're going to come to a little Fabrengen with the president, with the Shazar. So I asked him, what's the occasion? So he told me the editor of the encyclopedia, Rav Hutner was the executive editor. The editor of the material was Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. I don't have to tell you who Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin was. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, a giant of Torah, a giant Nikolatar Kula, a Chabadnik who yet knew the Rashab, the fifth Rebbe. What was the reason for the Fabrengen? Rav Zevin's kid brother just arrived in Israel. Had to be the mid-70s when they were letting out, not major amounts, but letting out Jews. Brother just arrived. His brother, 18, 20 years younger, knew nothing. And Rav Zevin very much wanted the brother to see how religion is honored in Israel. How do you honor religion? The president of Israel should make a party in honor of the fact that Rav Zevin's brother arrived from Russia? Just think, Russia, president, their concepts. At the president's house, we had a beautiful Fabrengen with the president of Israel, like a chassid, back to his youth, Rav Shneur Zalman Rubishov, Shaza, Rashi Teva, Viet Geret, everything was in Yiddish. And this new immigrant from Russia was sitting there. Imagine the way he felt He didn't understand Yiddish, did he? No, Avati Atfashtan in Yiddish. That was the Jew's native language. I spoke in Russia, in any city outside of Moscow and Leningrad, the language I spoke was Yiddish. Anyone over 40 was fluent in Yiddish. Anyone over 40, I'm talking in the 1980s. In Moscow and Leningrad, many knew English, many knew Hebrew. These were different cities. But in Minsk, Riga, Vilna, Chabgeret Yiddish, Avada. And he felt the president, his brother, the cover they were giving his brother. The president stood up for his brother. Remember? Don't forget. He went to see the Rebbe, and the leftist here went crazy. The president of Israel comes to New York, and he goes to see a rabbi? The rabbi should come to see him. He's the president. And Shazar answered, "Say, Fashtein, what a chassid is. I can be president, but I'm a chassid of Lubavitch. It's the way I grew up. This was my heritage. By the way, every morning at davening, I get birchat kahanim from Shazar's great-nephew, okay? My dear friend, Itai Hagiti. That's his Hebraized name. Itai Hagiti. Very interesting individual, tremendous Baal Tzedakah, very quiet, respectful. Birchat Kohanim, I always give him a Yashar Koyach. Great-nephew of his, that was his mother's uncle. He remembers him as Uncle Shanur, his mother's uncle, family. No? So how can you judge a Russian Jew? True, he's an anus, but this is a different type of inus than what went on in Portugal and Spain. And this is the classic Tinuk Shenishba. And this is the Rambam, Hilchit Mamrim, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel. You should all be familiar with it. A very important perek in the Rambam. That originally, when a Jew didn't observe, we made his life bitter. We punished him. The Gemara says, Moridin v'ein malin, malin v'ein moridin. You know what it means. If he goes up in a tree, you take the ladder away. If he goes into a pit, you cover up the pit. That doesn't apply today. Because that's only if someone is rebellious on his own. But today, Tinok Shenishba Bein Akam, he knows nothing. And there's a very powerful Gemara that proves that this is a Jew and a Jew remains a Jew. It's a very powerful Gemara that everyone quotes in the Geirut controversy of today. It's in Klal Gadol, the Sugya Samach Gimel. You'll see in Shabbos. Periklau Gadol, it's a famous Gemara, Hamitgayer Bein Ha'akum. And he didn't know that there's a concept of Shabbos. So the Gemara raises the issue for 10 years times 52 weeks. He was Machalos Shabbos. How many Kabbana does he have to bring? Is it one act of ignorance or each Shabbat is different? Nope. How can you have a convert who doesn't know the laws of Shabbos? You see what's going on in Israel. I hope it's not true, but the rumor had it that they disbased and converted. This involves Rabbi Sherman and against Rabbi Drukman. Oh, what went on here? It brings tears to the eyes. And this lady was converted by the Beit Din, and they met her in a supermarket, and she was wearing pants. And they know the conversion. I hope it's not true, but this is the story that circulated here. No? Can anyone in their right mind annul a conversion because a lady's not wearing pants? A lady is wearing pants, not a skirt? No? And with the pants today, tell me which is more modest? Which is more modest? Loose-fitting pants? Or with the skirts today, I mean? Or a mini skirt? Which is more modest? Rabbi Vajis Psak. The Rav was Mate. All right, believe me, I'm not in favor of pants. And I tell all my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, I'm happy to see my new granddaughter-in-law-to-be, or my granddaughter, my children, Bnei Ben Marim Kabbanim. She came to see me Friday with the Chatan, I'm being Masada Kedushin in a few weeks' time, in early January. She bought a shekel. They went to Bnei Brak, she bought a shekel. And I say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani modelecha, that I'm zeichet to such grandchildren. And I grew up in the Bronx. We had no Yiddishkeit whatsoever. You don't even start to understand the way I grew up, the way Yitzchak grew up. Herbie Maltz grew up in Elizabeth. He's a little better off there.
But grew up.
Where'd you grow up? Brooklyn. Where'd you come to when you came to America?
Newark.
Newark. All right, Newark was an Irvine, be Israel. You're a little better off there. But Steve understands me. He grew up in the Bronx, not far from me. Michael understands me. He grew up in Philadelphia. And I'm Modela Kaddish Baruch Hu. So, how can it be, a person converts and they doesn't know what Shabbat is? Toisvis, I mean, everyone, all the Rishonim asked the question, how can it be? So Toisvis, they give an example that I can put it into modern day language. The book that he studied Judaism from, the pages on Shabbat were ripped out. You follow? No one taught him. So, you see, he's a full Jew, a total Jew. All the Gemara is concerned with is how many Karbanot he has to bring. But you see from here that a Jew in Russia, a Jew in Russia, Ribbono Shel Olam, Natan Kohn's relatives in Russia under the communists, they didn't observe publicly, didn't observe privately, they didn't know a thing about Yiddishkeit, but they're still total, complete Jews. Now, what's interesting here, and I'll make a sideshow for you, just to round out the information, this is the famous Tshuva of Reb Moshe. A guy named Rakefet, many, many years ago, decades ago in the Kollel, gave Shurim on Geirut. And among his most famous Shurim that people quoted all over, and the Rabbanim said to me, boy, did you open our eyes. I showed that Reb Moshe Feinstein never changed his mind on any topic. You couldn't budge him. With our AID, what went on with Satmar, Reb Moshe remained Reb Moshe. One topic, you see how his mind changes over the decades.
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. You can't.
His mind about Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, you can't really quote Reb Moshe because everything published was after his death, and it's hard to believe half of what was published. But it doesn't matter. Thanksgiving, you say he became more benevolent.
He said, if you happen to be in a house where they're serving turkey, you can eat the turkey.
Right. No, it became more benevolent. But what they published afterwards, the Pulim.
Yes, sir.
Well, what came out after his death, I think it's volume 9, 8, 9, but they came out, he said, I followed the Rub, it's okay. We'll leave it stand on the Rub. Someone just sent me an email with another story about the Rub and Thanksgiving. Everyone agrees, ear witness and eyewitness, the Rub did participate in the Thanksgiving Day Sukkah. But coming back here, Reb Moshe, you see his tshuva from America, and I'm quoting him now. He says, I don't get involved in Geirut, he says. But ani malamed schut al chavayrai who do Geirut, even with their problems in the total lifestyle afterwards. And he quotes the Gemara in Shabbat, Hamid Gayet, Bein HaAkum, who didn't know there was a concept of Shabbos. He says, what do you see from that, Gemara? That conversion means the person wants to be a Jew, but it's their concept of Judaism. He didn't know there was a Shabbos, but nevertheless, it's a good conversion. So Reb Moshe says in America, and boy, does he hit the nail on the head, Reb Moshe says in America, where people convert, they convert to be a Jew like all the other Jews. So who are they looking at? Who do they see as Jews? How many of the converts know Rabbi Soloveitchik? Know Rabbi Feinstein? They know Governor Lehman of New York.
They see reports.
They know, well, the famous people. These are Bob Dylan. Hank Greenberg, right? These are the famous Jews. Barbara Streisand. Streisand, who do you say?
Bob Zimmerman.
Bob Zimmerman, is Rob Dylan. Who do they know?
He refused to pick up his Nobel laureate.
Yeah, we know it. We know it. The whole world knows it, unfortunately. Boy, oh boy. Because he's a goon. He's off the wall. Yeah, I told you, and I learned in Lakewood. Remember what I taught you? As an Omala. Find how many goyim are normal, okay?
They're
excited. So, yeah, someone asked me about the Rav, about certain stories about him. I said, from these stories you see, had the Rav not married, he never would have become the Rav. Thank God he married, and this helps a genius walk properly. The same with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. His wife, when you look at Rebbe Tzinchaya Mushka, she was his support. You see, from all the memoir literature, and when the Rebbe revealed himself, remember, to his doctor, he said that when the doctor said you can now go home and you can go back to a normal life, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, remember that my midday tea with my wife is as important to me as putting on tefillin every morning. That's genius. Depth, how to work out a good life, a happy marriage, be a balanced individual. Wow. Okay? But this is unbelievable what Reb Moshe said. Who are they looking at? He thinks he's a good Jew. He's like all the other Jews. And you have to know, this is one of the biggest problems in conversion. Let's take the state of Israel. I participated the past year, I was in Tel Aviv for Shabbos. Thursday I participated in the shul, my student shul. His father was speaking to a whole group of converts. This is from Tzohar, sponsored by Tzohar. And my student, this is one of the teachers, but his father was speaking that night. His father was a survivor. And he spoke about how he survived, that if you don't believe in God, it doesn't make any sense. He explained every miracle that happened to him, how he escaped the Nazis. His father was killed, and he and his mother, and the stories he told her, it's like you can't believe this has really happened, but he's there, he's speaking. So one of the biggest problems in conversion, Rabbi Reuben, I trust, will agree with me because he was involved in teaching, is these would-be converts, they look at the famous Jews, Netanyahu. No? Netanyahu, everyone knows him. The head of the army, what's his name, Eisenkopf. Everyone knows him. Who's Shomer Shabbos? They look at it. We want to be Jews like everyone else. What do you want out of us? It's a very logical question. And you have to explain to them that someone born into the club is born. When you have a club, a golf club, so if your father was a member, you're automatically a member. But if you want to come in, you got to meet the standards to join the club. That's one way to go. I'm not happy with that answer, but it's an answer that people accept. The other part is, look, we're not saying they're good Jews. I'm not happy with Netanyahu, that he's not a public Shomer Shabbos wearing a kippah. I would like to see him with his tzitzit sticking out. That Dafsai Mefrim V'Yichman, he has to be frimmer than I am, because he represents the state of Israel. I would love it, but...
You might not get elected.
Well, say that the day will come when he will be elected because of that. But, Bekarov. But what I want to show you is, this is a legitimate question. What Reb Moshe is saying, and the proof from the Gemara, is unbelievably powerful. Unbelievably. Hamitgayeh Ben Akum didn't know there was a Shabbat. All the Gemara is concerned with, what carbon does he bring? 1 or 52? Unbelievable. Okay. Excuse me? I believe it's Samach Gimel, and that it's in Klal Gadol right at the start. You can't miss it. If I'm off, I'm off by a daf.
They all said that Rav Moshe always gave his opinions of what they call seichel.
No, Rav Moshe, he had a lot of common sense because of the way he was Rav and the way he was raised and what he saw in life. And you see the beautiful family he raised. You have to understand that Rav Moshe came with these kids to America in 1937. it could be Reb Reuven Feinstein was born in America. But
I think one of them was born in America.
Then it's Reb Reuven. But Reb David and Shifra and his daughter who married the Rav Shiskal, and these were all American kids who grew up greenhorns. And how much money did Reb Moshe make? And they struggled, you understand? And all the kids turned out aces, one after another.
David was the son of my oldest grandson.
Very nice, very nice. He's an edel mensch, oh, Reb David. Okay, now, so the halacha, you can't exactly compare Soviet Jews to the Anusim. But on the other hand, even if they're not on the level of the Anusim, and even if their private practice is not what we would expect, and their private practice is treif and chilul Shabbos, and all that goes with it, they know nothing. Tinokat shenishba'u. You can't fault them. You can't criticize them. They've been indoctrinated by the communist system. I told you, a very famous refusenik said to me in the early 80s in Ramot that she can't understand how such an intelligent person like you are, Harav Rakefet, how can you believe in such narishkeit? Primitive, primitive religion. It's mind-boggling. This is... They were indoctrinated. Primitive religion. I don't know.
This is what Abraham says about his family.
What do you mean about his family?
He says that those are the kinds of things his family said.
Oh, no. They were indoctrinated. Yeah. Of course, of course. Primitive religion. Opium of the masses. And I look at them. Believe me, we know that. We know that. And nevertheless, they are Jews. And you have to do everything to help them and to save them. This is exactly what Reb Menashe Klein Paskin is. My dear students, we now come to the high point of today, and we're not going to finish this issue, and he raises it here. Wow. Let me ask you something else. Fine. These are the Jews in Russia. Should we help them? Shouldn't we help them? Absolutely help them. Should every Jew leave Russia? I never thought about this problem. I went to Russia. I have to help get every Jew out who wants to leave. Got back to the free world. And I write in Washington, and thank God I published documents to show that I'm not making it up. Because a book just came out that totally recreates history. Agudat Yisrael, once again, Midvar Sheka, Tikra Ve'elecha. Sheka wins all. I'll show you the book, I'll comment on it, but not yet. I want to finish the book. Frightening. Got out of Russia, went to work to get out one family, the Essas family, E-S-A-S. Started working for Essas, and I started creating waves. And among the waves I created reached B'nai Brak, and there were some right-wing business people there who did business in Russia and would bring Essas svarim and food, money. And they got all upset with me. What are you trying to get them out? They need him in Russia. He teaches. Avraham, they were a little upset with me. Now, I happen to know these people well. I taught their sister. I'm not going to give you any more details. I don't want them identified. Suffice it to say, they made headlines in the Israeli newspaper afterwards, went to jail, money crimes. Well, they started up with me, and it was shocking to me. So I told them, Alex, relax yourself. I'm well aware of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's viewpoint. Give me a chance. Don't jump on me till I finish next week. Be'ezrat Hashem. So they went and asked the Shailen B'nai Brak. And they were told, believe it or not, the man has suffered enough. Get them out. And they got back to me and said they're willing to help me. They couldn't play a big role because the contacts I needed ultimately were beyond everyone, and I made the contact through the fact that I teach Torah. I was teaching this person's niece. The niece opened the door for me, and this Rabbi Israel Singer, Rabbi Dr. Izzy Singer, opened the door to Bronfman, and ultimately Bronfman brought them out, as I write about and told you many times over the generations. But this is a very interesting question. Do you want them to stay? But if they stay, their lives are in danger. How much can they teach? How much can they get away with? Let's go back to Mumasara. She brought out thousands and thousands. Just think, had she not brought out those thousands with the forged passports, what would have become with them? And this is a very difficult, delicate question.
How about the present day? You have Rabbi Lazar, who's
very friendly. The present day, Russia is more religious than America. So relax yourself. We're not talking about the present. You're quoting your Rebbe, who has said Putin is a Chabad Chassid. I've said it many times. No two ways about it. And there are reasons why. I have here, I'll give you something you'll read, you'll see. But this question is very delicate. Not only that, the Anusim were told, if you have any chance to get out, get out. Some of the Anusim, and it's all in the Tshuva, you'll see the sources. Some of the Anusim, the Maranos, decided to stay because they wanted to teach their children. If they get out and leave their wife and children, what's going to be with the kids? And some of them got a psak. It doesn't matter. You have to get out. You can't worry about anyone else. You have to get where you can be Shomer Shabbos and become a Jew again. And you can't worry not about your wife, not about your children. Maybe they'll get out later or you'll start all over. So you see, with Russian Jewry, get out. What does it mean, get out? What about the families you leave behind? What about your hashpa'ah and those who remain behind? And here he quotes that Reb Menashe Klein says, I know of cases where the stifler was asked, Reb Yaakov Yisrael Kenyevsky, Reb Chaim Kenyevsky's father, the Chazon Ish's brother-in-law, the stifler Rav, I have a grandson named after him, Yaakov Yisrael, my eldest grandson, by the way, I just spoke with him before. And the stifler said, remain. You're doing too much good work in Russia. The Admor Milabavitch, Kvod Kedushato Admor Milabavitch Shlita, the Chen Shamati, I heard from the, in the name of the Babel Shem Rebbe, that remain, don't get out. A very delicate question. And more than that, what happens when they come to America? And here's a description of the United States that Abraham recognizes, that Yomo recognizes. Uvavanotenu harabim b'emet ra'inu. Kama mehem shabo kan liat sot abrit. We see from those that have come to America, they continue to eat chasa, they continue to do every sin under the book. Until now they had a din of ones. They didn't know any better. Akshav beratzon gamur behefkeret mamish rubam veruba de ruba. What are you bringing them to America for? Look what happens. Look how they get ruined. And of course, the answer is there's no black and white answer. It needs a lot of good judgment. But the bottom line, get every Jew out as soon as you can. For one simple reason. Avraham Rachman is sitting here, and Yomo Gachman is sitting here. Multiply them by hundreds, by thousands. In the free world, they get out. They're overwhelmed. Freedom, money. You go to Manhattan Beach, you can drive up and down the streets right near the beach. One mansion after another. We're not talking now little apartments in Jerusalem. Mansions, multi-million dollar structures. 80% of them owned by Russians who came to America penniless. Look at the doorposts, mezuzahs twice the size of the one on my apartment, maybe three times the size. My outdoor mezuzah is very precious to me because it's in stone hewn from Har Tzion. In 69, a company began and they invited American rabbis, and I just come in Aliyah, I was still a partial American rabbi, and I got a gift. So I have that stone until today with the mezuzah inside. In America, in Israel, in the free world, get them out. We're talking the 80s, the 90s. The work that's being done, Lekarevotam. Go to Manhattan Beach and see what Chabad has built there. See the shuls that Chabad has taken over. See the mikvot with English and Russian lettering on it. Chabad. Go to their nightclubs where they hulava, strictly kosher, under hashgacha. So you see, it's true. Many come to America and live the same hefkerut. But ultimately in the free world, something is happening. You start to ask questions. And it's very different than communist Russia at that time. Get them out. In Chase Bank, one of the Chase Banks, which are ubiquitous in New York City, on every other block, there's a Chase. So in Borough Park, there are a number of banks. So when I used to spend part of the summer in Borough Park, I was there maybe 20 plus years, till I lost that apartment. Now I'm in Kew Gardens Hills. It's a different area. And in the bank, a Russian man now working his way up, perfect English, well-dressed, became friendly. No background, nothing whatsoever. His kid's in yeshiva. He's Shomer Shabbos today. Avraham and Yomo will yet become Talmidei Chachamim, we hope. So that's what I say to Reb Menashe Klein, and he agrees to, with all the problems, he's calling a spade, but these are very delicate issues. Who should leave? Today, the issue's reversed. Who should go back? Itzhak Kogan, Leningrad, finally gets out in 87. Was the head of the whole community, the religious Serivnikim, the Chabadnikim in Leningrad. Comes to Israel. All right, some of his children are here, which is very important, even more important than Yitzchak's being here. He's back in Moscow, rabbi of the downtown Chabad Shul in Moscow. He's perfect. Knows Russian mentality. Russian is his native language.
Judaism, the rabbi once told me, is growing and it stays so in a restricted area, which is communism. Come to America, the freedom, assimilation.
Yitzhak Kogan told me the following. He said, this isn't the communist era. He said, Bara Torah, Bara Yetzirah, according to Gemara, that there's evil in the world, Yetzirah in the world, but Bara Tavlin, we have it, sure, we have Torah. And he said, you have to give the communist empire credit. There's no pornography here. But we have no Torah. In America, you have Torah because you have pornography. It's not a bad word. That's what you're saying. Pornography expresses already. I remember when I took Elia Essas, had just gotten out, and I took him on his first trip to Tel Aviv. I remember he was flabbergasted at the pornography available right outside the old Central bus station. Boy, was that a shock. Coming from communist Russia, in Yerushalayim, it's not that bad, Baruch Hashem. It's still the holy city. But Tel Aviv? Wow. Gentlemen, the best is yet to come, but that has to wait till next week. Yes, Yomo.
The same applies to internet as well. 100%. It had not been for pornography that developed the whole system. The whole largely was developed for pornography. But at least half of the internet.
No, that's not actually true.
Maybe not half, but it's not even close. Internet.
I don't know. I don't know. On the internet.
All the technology for use for that is now used for Torah.
Now used for Torah. All right. Let me just repeat that.
We don't have a minion.
We'll get a minion. You've got range to minion?
I asked them to.
Question. Is it possible?
How many did you ask? I asked you to ask three. Do shlicha. Go next door, see if you can bring in a few. What are you raising your head? Go to the base medrash. I don't understand. They don't listen to you.
You're talking about 6:45.
6:45, okay. Let me reiterate. Let me finish.
Is it possible to get a copy of the third volume of our Kefir? For less than 150 shekel? That's a lot of money.
Please make it available for whatever they give. Any donation, and show Natan where they are. Someone may come tomorrow. Murray wanted to buy three copies last week. Did he get it? Did Murray? Okay, so you be the man tomorrow if anyone wants. And Rabbi Rubin, whatever donation he makes is fine. Okay, to reiterate, so what do we do today? We continue with Russian Jewry, the Muma Sarah. The whole question of the status of a Russian Jew, the Hefkerit when they come to America, the comparison to Anusim, the whole question of Tinuk Shenishpa, leaving, remaining, these are very delicate questions. For many of these questions, there's no black and white answer. But you have to have not just halakhic understanding, you have to have a lot of common sense, and you have to be able to judge the matzav as it really is. God have mercy if someone would have paskind in 1938, remain in Berlin, or remain in Warsaw if you could get out, if you don't want your kids to go off the path. And
but
by the way,
people did remain.
People did remain.
No, but you had certain
right. We're well aware of it. I want to tell you.
Yes, I got the right.
A safer just came out. I highly recommend it. It's a malach in our midst. It's about Rav Moshe Tversky, Hashem Yikom Damo. He was killed in Har Nof in the massacre. This is the Rav's grandson, Professor Yitzchak Tversky's son. And I have to say, I didn't realize what a tzaddik he was. There's tzmamish tzidkut in here. That's unbelievable. I mean, I give you one example. That he would sleep in the old city Purim night to be sure that he's chayav to read the Megillah on Shushan Purim, the wall part of the old city. He had very fascinating chumras, which were his own. He didn't impose it upon anyone else. And it's a very nice volume. What a wonderful Rebbe he was. It's published by Feldheim or distributed by Feldheim. A Malach in Our Midst, written by a Talmud.
You taught at Torah Moshe?
Yeah, yeah. Written by a Talmud from Torah Moshe, Rabbi Yoshua Berman. Very nice. Yitzchak, this is all for you in here. Pass this back to Yitzchak. If anyone wishes, this is a research paper published at the University of Haifa, The Jewish Vote, Political Power and Identity in U.S. Presidential Elections. It's before the present election. It's leading into it. Very, very fascinating. It's one part, it's in English and Hebrew. In other words,
unfortunately, most of them voted for Hillary.
Well, read it. It shows you the change.
They just had a poll. 90% of the Muncie voted for Trump, and 90% of Kerry Sewell voted for Hillary.
Okay.
We're voted for Hillary?
Okay, one second.
Kerry Sewell.
If anyone wants, this is Yatev Neaman's newspapers of a week ago. What I found very interesting is their take on the American Agudat Yisrael. And here is a volume, the Shabbos Kodesh. This deals more with the yeshiva world and halachic issues, but it gives you insight to the Litvish world as represented by Degel HaTorah in Israel. Here's an article from the New York Times. Will Ivanka Trump be the most powerful first daughter in history? It's amazing. This is the foreword on Jared Kushner. Listen, is Jared Kushner on the verge of becoming Donald Trump's de facto president? This is the article from the KGB files and how they took in Rabbi Jacobowitz. It's an amazing article. New York Times, Mike Pence and conversion therapy, which gives me endless aggravation, because I had to thank you. I had students who were converted.
He's against it?
No, he was for it. But
oh, but they
quieted it down. This is the invitation to Rav Shlomo Kalbach's wedding. Here's the story of Kalbach, the last day of his life. Echu Chazah B'Tshuvah. It's a famous story. Anyone interested in Meir Kahana, this is from my own research, my recent article. This is the article on him in Wikipedia. This is from the BTA yearbook about Meir Kahana. And if anyone wants an old Jewish action, winter 2015, here it is. And who will save a Hurachim?